I'm Doug Nadvornik. Today on the Inland Journal podcast, an aha discovery for children who have a little-known disease known as Duarte galactosemia. This is a variant of a disorder known as galactosemia, in which people are unable to properly digest milk and can actually die if they drink it. But it's been unclear whether milk is toxic for children with this milder version. For years, WSU researcher Nancy Potter has been investigating this disease. She and others have been trying to determine whether they can draw up a consistent set of advice for parents. Some states say it's perfectly okay for kids with Duarte galactosemia to drink milk. Others say beware. For the last couple of years, Potter's been part of an Atlanta-based study, Emory University, that has tried once and for all to answer the question for kids with Duarte galactosemia, milk or no milk. The answer is in, and we went to Nancy Potter to hear what it is.
Galactosemia is a rare inborn error of metabolism. It's detected in the heel poke of babies right at birth, and it's that heel poke test is often called a PKU test, although we test for over 30 different rare diseases. And galactosemia is one disease where children cannot have any milk or milk products, and if they do, it causes severe damage to their kidneys and livers and death within 2 weeks. So if you nurse your baby, they will die.
So that's why they do it at birth.
Yes, we don't have a notification law, so not all parents across the U.S. are notified in time, which is sad.
Now, there's galactosemia and there's Duarte galactosemia. What's the difference between those two?
So galactosemia has several different variants. One of them, classic galactosemia, and that's the one where children can't have milk. They have 1% or less of the GALT enzyme, and it's the enzyme needed to break down the milk. Then there is Duarte galactosemia, and that's somewhere between 1 or 2% of the enzyme and 25% of the enzyme they have compared to a typical population.
And what's been your interest in this? Why have you focused on this in your career?
I did a small study on galactosemia for my postdoc, which is a study you do right after your doctoral studies before you get a real job. And I didn't intend to stay on this topic, but the people were so nice. And when I joined the group from Harvard and Emory and the Netherlands, they said, "Ooh, you are the piece of the puzzle that's missing. We need you in our studies. Would you join our team?" And I don't think I've ever been invited to join a Harvard team before, so I did.
So what was your role then in this study then?
So I look at outcomes. So I say, who's the most affected? I test their speech, their language, their cognition, and their motor skills and say, these kids are affected or these adults are affected. And then my colleagues do all the really smart stuff like sequence the genes and do the brain imaging. So I am the outcome person.
So tell me about the magnitude of this study. And for those of us who aren't in this, is this a big deal study?
It's a landmark study, and it affects about 30,000 families a year in the U.S., and then people in the other countries too. Duarte galactosemia is primarily a European issue, so people of European ancestry are the most likely, especially if you're Irish and especially if your ancestors were travelers or gypsies.
How did they participate, the families in this study?
Newborn registries from the results from the tests are kept by most states. Washington is not one of them. They keep track of the individuals who were diagnosed with Duarte galactosemia. So we contacted the newborn registries in the states where they do keep records and asked if they would send out invites to families who would have children between the ages of 6 and 12, whether or not that child had Duarte galactosemia, but in the family they have Duarte galactosemia.
Invitations were sent out to the families, and they said yes, and then what happened?
Then they contacted us. We couldn't contact them directly because of HIPAA, because of privacy notices, so they had to be contacted by their agencies. But then they sent us back a card saying, yes, they were interested in participating in the study. If we got enough from a geographic area, maybe a three-state area, then a team of five of us flew to that area. We set up shop in a Homewood Suites or an Embassy Suites, and then the children went from room to room We had a little trouble figuring out how to do this because it is somewhat suspect to take a child into your hotel room. So we had a bedroom and a living room, and the parents were welcome to follow us. A psychology battery and a speech battery and a motor battery of tests. They were standing on one foot, they were hopping, they were jumping, they were throwing a ball, they were writing on a Surface tablet to look at tremor. We were doing IQ tests, we were doing anxiety tests, we were doing interest tests. We tested them for 4 to 4.5 hours per child, and we tested 360 children.
And what was in it for the parents? What did they want to know out of all this?
Well, the parents of the 6 to 12-year-olds have already made decisions about diet. So they're really kind of looking at the future babies to be born and maybe perhaps their grandchildren who, because this is genetic, it would be passed down. So they were doing it to find out what goes on with Duarte galactosemia. We had two small studies prior. One looked at young children. The average age was 2.5, and they said, no, kids with Duarte don't have problems. But at 2.5, it's hard to know if there are learning problems. And then there was another study done by the CDC, and they looked at children in the Atlanta public schools and said the children with Duarte have a little higher enrollment in speech and language services than do the general public. So those were the two studies that we had primarily that we were basing this study off of.
So I want to go back. These kids did not drink milk, or they were
restricted
from drinking milk. Otherwise, they ran the risk of some sort of motor issues, that sort of thing.
So we didn't know if they ran any risk. So there was an editorial that ran alongside of our publication in Pediatrics that said that the title was a study or a question that's older than most pediatricians. We've been wondering for 50 years if the children born with Duarte galactosemia should be lactose restricted or not. Each state has had different recommendations, and it's gone by state or by region. So in Washington, we have detected Duarte galactosemia. We have notified parents, but then we said it's no big deal. Just go on and live your life. Go ahead and give them milk. The same for most of California. States like Georgia said, we don't know if there's outcome problems. We do know in classic galactosemia, kids have outcome problems, so we don't know about Duarte. So restrict their milk. Don't give them any milk. Put them on a soy formula or an elemental formula. And then at age 1 or 2, we'll do a milk challenge and see what happens to their blood levels when they drink a lot of milk. Other states detected and said, we don't know if you should restrict or not. Therefore, let's see, your baby has 25% production. Why don't you give them milk 1 out of every 4 bottles and then soy formula the other? That recommendation doesn't make any sense, because if you think milk is very bad for you, why would you give them 25% milk? If you think milk doesn't harm you, then why would you restrict it at all?
So it's either or, milk or no.
Yeah, it's an all or nothing. Then there's two states, Utah and New York, that decided it was expensive to test for them, so they decided to keep classic galactosemia in the panel but drop Duarte, so those parents didn't know they had Duarte.
We're talking with Nancy Potter, who is a researcher in the WSU College of Medicine in the Speech and Hearing Sciences program.
Were there surprises along the way? Were you finding out that, oh, this isn't what we thought we'd find at all?
So I was a tester on the study, and so I was blinded to who had Duarte and who was a sibling of a person with Duarte. And speech and language, I was pretty sure, wasn't going to be outstanding as it is in classic galactosemia, because I've never given so many normal speech or language tests in my life. But my impression was that maybe motor skills were affected, because we had a lot of kids who didn't have really great eye-hand coordination and didn't have great gross motor. In fact, we found that 16% of the kids scored below the 5th percentile in coordination. Now, my colleague, Elizabeth Wilson, who is also a speech pathologist who traveled with me on the grant, she asked the kids a question that I wish we had included in the battery. How much screen time do you have? How much time do you spend watching videos and playing video games? And had we asked that question, it would have been the golden question, because it did seem that the kids who spent a lot of screen time were less coordinated on their hopping, jumping, standing on one leg. Now, that's not a one-to-one correlation, but in the areas of the country where screen time was seemed to be more prevalent, we had a high incidence of people who were not as coordinated. So I thought maybe those were the kids with Duarte galactosemia. But in the end, the controls ended up with they were equivalent, but if anything, it would have gone towards the controls.
I guess the thought would be that these kids were spending so much time doing stuff related to the screens that they weren't doing stuff related to developing their motor skills.
Yeah, they weren't throwing a ball, they weren't catching a ball, they weren't playing hopscotch, they were looking at screens. But it wasn't a question we formally asked. It was just a question my colleague thought of asking and we didn't put into the protocol, but we wish we had.
So how do you explain these results to the parents of kids who have Duarte galactosemia and those who didn't or who thought they did and didn't?
So we sent everybody a letter saying what our results were. We followed up with the people, and then we also had to have a plan for disseminating. So we published our findings in the journal Pediatrics. And then we have a website, and we have our Wikipedia, and we have some gene websites.
But you don't necessarily go back to all those families whose kids you tested and explain it.
They don't get individual tests back, but they did get the results of the study back.
So I want to go back again to the question that I asked before in terms of the magnitude of the findings of this study. Help explain to me, among the scientists who deal with this, was this a surprise? Was this a little bit different than what you thought?
Because of that high prevalence of motor difficulties or coordination difficulties, I thought maybe the kids were affected by Duarte. So I didn't find out their diagnosis until after we had done the statistics. We kept the testers blinded. So I was surprised. I don't think the other investigators in the study were surprised, but because I was in the trenches doing the testing, I was.
So does this mean Duarte kids can start drinking milk now?
It sure does. And that has created some people who question our results. On Facebook yesterday, there was a discussion on, my child was scheduled for a milk challenge, and the doctor just called up and said, we don't need to do a milk challenge. Go ahead and feed them ice cream. And parents, after restricting milk for a year, are very hesitant to go ahead and not have a milk challenge done with a blood draw afterwards. So it is changing recommendations across the U.S. and probably worldwide. And if you were one who restricted your child's milk, and now you're told, okay, you're in the middle of this milk restriction, go ahead and feed them milk, it would cause concern for a parent.
Wow. That is a big deal.
It is. We expected pushback on the results no matter what they turned out. If they had shown that kids with Duarte galactosemia had some developmental concerns, then states like Washington, who don't restrict, and especially if those developmental concerns were associated with early milk exposure, then states like Washington would be backpedaling, saying, yikes, we should have been restricting. So we would have gotten pushback there. Now we get pushback a little bit because people are restricting. So we knew no matter what the results, it would still be controversial. But with science, that's what science is. You look at a question, you do the science, and the results are the results.
Nancy Potter is a professor in WSU's College of Medicine, the Speech and Hearing Sciences program. She's based in Spokane. We want to thank all of our subscribers to the Inland Journal podcast, which is devoted to regional public affairs. To find and subscribe to this podcast, you can search for Inland Journal in iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Send your thoughts and story ideas to InlandJournal@kpbx.org or call our listener comment line at 509-232-6904. Thank you for listening. I'm Doug Nadvornik.